Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, ladies. Hello, gentlemen. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I'm Jack Fowler. You are here to listen to Victor Davis Hanson, the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marcia Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. He's also the proprietor of a website, The Blade of Perseus. The web address there is victorhanson.com. I'll tell you more towards the end of this episode why you should be subscribing. We are recording on Friday, April 5th, and this particular episode will be airing on Tuesday, April 9th. As ever, so much news out there to get Victor's wisdom on and his analysis. And I think the first topic we'd like to hear from Victor on is Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State, with screeds directed at Israel and promises that NATO will take in Ukraine. And we'll get Victor's thoughts on that and other topics right after these important messages.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We are back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, I'm pretty sure you touched on this a little bit with Sammy in the most recent podcast, but Anthony, let's look at our foreign policy makes sense through the Secretary of State. And Anthony Blinken, along with, of course, the president and many others, the Secretary of Defense, just really, really hard rhetoric directed at Israel for its defending itself. At the same time, Anthony Blinken pledged that NATO will take in Ukraine, which I kind of find to be extremely troubling to our national security. Victor, what are your thoughts about Anthony Blinken in both these areas?
Well, I don't want to be, you know, just completely negative, but Anthony Blinken was the one, Jack, that called Mike Morrell, the former interim CIA director, right in the last, what was it, the last 2 weeks of the 2020 campaign, and said, "Mike, according to Morrell, can you round up John Brennan and James Clapper, both, by the way, who had admitted to lying under oath to the U.S. Congress without any ramifications? Can you get the retired CIA Intelligence Committee to say that Hunter's laptop is Russian disinformation?" And they did. I mean, Jake Sullivan did the Alpha Ping hoax in 2016. So this national security team doesn't have a good reputation. But it's funny that he even mentioned NATO, because this has been the Russian propaganda line all along, that the reason they went in was that the United States in the post-Cold War period under George H.W. Bush, and then tapering end of the Bill Clinton and on into the George W. Bush administration, had promised Russia that they would not bring NATO to the doorstep of the new Russian Federation borders, i.e. they were not going to put Ukraine into NATO. And we all know about Victoria Nuland and her involvement in the removal of that pro-Russian Ukrainian government. But my point is, that was hotly denied by people. But if now, post facto, he's saying, well, it's something we should consider, it almost suggests that it's been on his mind a long time. And maybe actually we did give some indication that Russian intelligence picked up that that was our long-term agenda for Ukraine. Is it a mistake? Yes, it is a mistake, because we don't want NATO right on the border of, I mean, some of the countries we have no choice, given the makeup of the post-Cold War Eastern Europe. But there's no reason to take a former province of Russia, Ukraine, and then to put it inside NATO, and then to be pledged to defend it with the full force of NATO should Russia invade. I.e., Jack, if that had been true on February 24th of 2022, we'd be in a war with a nuclear power right now. And the thing that we should also know, I'm not sure it would have helped much, because the idea that a bunch of Spaniards having cappuccino in Barcelona, or some people, you know, in Venice going, taking a nice little leisurely boat tour of the city, are going to drop everything and pick up their M4s and take the train to Ukraine to fight the Ruskies. I don't think it's going to happen myself. So right. Anytime, as a general principle, anytime you expand NATO and there's any question that that new expansion will be problematic should it be vulnerable or have exposure for the entire alliance, then you weaken the alliance. So the alliance was called the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And that was, the idea was that Britain and France and countries toward the west of Europe, and especially in North America, Canada, the United States, had this North Atlantic nexus. And now we're all over the map. I don't mind Turkey, sweets. Right? Yeah. Turkey. Turkey's not an ally of the United States. There's no way. If there was a war, Turkey would be on the other side. Let's admit it. It wouldn't come to it. Erdogan has said in the last 2 years that one day the Greeks would wake up and they would see a rain of Turkish missiles falling on Athens. This was in connection with his 80 to 100 overflights per month of Greek sovereign territory in the Dodecanese Islands, off the coast of Turkey. And then we've had him say the same thing about Israel's going to wake up and see rockets come at them. So, yeah. And so it's a bad idea. And if Blinken shouldn't talk like that. And then, as you know, and you pointed out, he's also, that was just, there was a twofer this week. Not only did he say something stupid about a provocative NATO expansion, but he made the moral equivalence of October 7th and Israel, what Israel's doing to eradicate the murderer. So he said, basically, you're becoming more like Hamas. And I don't think he got the message that there was a ceasefire, Mr. Blinken. And on October 7th, somebody violated it, like 3,000 murdering gunmen and a tag along 500 Gazan volunteer civilians, which suggests that Hamas is popular among the civilians and they're intertwined. But that's another question. And they murdered and they raped and they mutilated and they beheaded. They did all of these pre-civilizational barbarities that we can't even imagine. And then Israel waited 20 days. And that interim, did Hamas say, oh, we're sorry? Or did somebody in Gaza say, they don't represent us? Or do they, to use a Western phrase, that they say, move in my name, you don't, Hamas? No. They started celebrating. They spit on corpses. They tried to mutilate the dead. They high-fived every time they saw a hostage being transported into Gaza. The architects of that massacre, whether they were in Qatar, another questionable ally, or in Beirut, were bragging that it was just the first volley in an existential war. So, oh, by the way, Jack, they didn't say, Mr. Blinken should know, they didn't say after they killed the first 700 Jews, they didn't say, well, you know what? This is really kind of barbaric and, you know, let's just have a ceasefire. No, no, they're calling for a ceasefire now, Mr. Blinken, because they're losing. They, as long as they were decapitating innocent people who were not armed, they didn't want a ceasefire. And then the question is arises, compared to what, Mr. Blinken, since you're now Clausewitz, what's your plan? Do you want them to, what, it's immediate ceasefire, we're told, or what, you're going to cut off ally arms to the only democratic ally we have in the Middle East? And then what happens? Well, we know what happens. Hamas comes out of the bunkers, and the kingpins of October 7th, they're still alive. They broadcast to the Arab world, 500 million Muslims and Iranians. They say, we defeated the Jews. Here we are. The worst day since the Holocaust. We killed more Jews than any other day since Auschwitz closed its doors. And what happened? I'm still here. They stopped. They couldn't defeat us. And that's going to be a rallying point.
Right.
Given what? Give them another 3 to 4 weeks, they will destroy Hamas. And then they'll be discredited and they will be humiliated. And maybe if Iran hasn't used Hezbollah to strike, they'll be very, very wary. Because once they destroy Hamas, they'll turn their attention to the border where there's 100,000 displaced Israeli citizens. And I think Iran will not want to use its other pawn, Hezbollah, because they remember right. what happened in 2006 in Beirut. And so this is very important that we don't do that. And if we can't make the moral distinction between a democratic ally who is retaliating to a pre-civilizational attack on its own civilian population at a time of peace and tries to drop leaflets and text people to get out of the way as they try to rescue hostages and retaliate against killers who are using their own citizens as shields in mosques and schools and hospitals. And we can't make that moral distinction. We who did what? When we left Kabul, remember General Milley, Jack? He said, a righteous strike. Well, it wasn't righteous, Mr. Milley. You killed 10 innocent civilians, 7 of which were children. I didn't fault you. Things happen in war. That's the tragedy of war. But for the United States then, and there was even, I don't know if Breitbart had it right or not, but on some of the more conservative blogs, there was questions that there was talk of war crimes. Did you remember that? They were talking about, well, there's people in the administration, and why isn't Merrick Garland? He's looking at war crimes for the Russians. Maybe he should be looking at the Israelis. Maybe we should be joining the international group that's threatening Israel with war crimes. I, as soon as I thought that, I said, okay, then what are they going to do to us? We killed civilians. And remember Barack Obama, the predator assassinations, when John Brennan said, we haven't killed one civilian. And then he said, oh, sorry, maybe there's 70. I lied under oath to Congress. And then did we take that seriously? Were we solemn and judicious about the severity of that dangerous program of targeted assassinations on the app? I guess not, because at a White House correspondents' dinner, Obama made a joke about any boy that would want to date his two daughters. He said, hey, I want to tell all of you boys, be careful. And it's called P-R-E-D-A-T-O-R, predator. Right. So that was a big ha-ha among the left, that we were joking about using predators to kill people, some of which were civilians. So nobody's hands are clean when you get into a war where civilians are interspliced with terrorists or killers, whether it's in Vietnam, whether it's in Fallujah, whether it's in Mosul, whether it's in Tokyo on March 11th, 1945, whether it's in Hamburg, whether it's in Stuttgart, 1944, just the way a war is.
Yeah.
But it's very different than going out and trying to cut somebody's throat. And the Israelis are not doing that. And by the way, the people who cut throats and decapitated sent 7,000 rockets into civilian centers. The Israelis are not trying to do that. And there's a question, you know, the final thing in this rant is, why doesn't the Israelis use civilian shields? I asked Sammy that. Why don't they do it?
Yeah.
They could put all of their civilians around all their military bases. And aside from the obvious answer that they're more humane than Hamas, they're humane, and I shouldn't say more, they're humane and Hamas isn't. That would be like honey to bees if they did that. Absolutely. As soon as Hamas found, oh my God, there's shields? We get to kill Jews. So if you can't make these moral distinctions, then you're pretty morally bankrupt, is what I think.
Also, as Victor, as a historian, you pointed out, but not crudely, but basically, here's a war that can be won, right? In Israel,
yes.
And Ukraine is clearly a war that cannot be won.
And I wrote that. I wrote this right, this week, Gaza, that my new column, and I said, this is. We have left Verdun territory, and now we're getting into the Battle of the Somme. We've left 700,000 dead, wounded, and missing at Verdun, and now we're getting up to 800 to a million Russian and combined Ukrainian casualties. According to the New York Times, they were quoting at 700,000 6 months ago. Right. So you can imagine where we're getting to. And they can, right? Ukraine cannot, I mean, whoever advised them in the West, whether it was a NATO commander or a United States commander who said to the Ukrainians, there's a 600-mile belt, it's a mile wide, it's full of tank traps, mines, drone surveillance, heavy artillery, dug-in troops, but you can do a George Patton or a Guderian and break through like Rommel or somebody onto that was insane that a country that's outnumbered 4-1 in population, 10-1 in GDP would attack a fortified position as if it's going to be a blitzkrieg. It just didn't happen. And that was that whole spring offensive sputtered out after 5 months in a catastrophic fashion. Every week, I won't mention names, but even some of my colleagues at the Hoover would say, well, they're going to win. It's just a matter that it's going wonderfully. No, it's not. In contrast, Israel is winning. And you give them 6 or 8 weeks, they will get rid of Hamas. And they've already got rid of about 75% of the people who planned this. And they've got the names of everybody, and they're going down the list that participated in that. They've got that from informants. They got that from prisoners they took, except they got it from surveillance, and they've got it from videos. And if we will let them do that, they will do a service to humanity in getting rid of Hamas. And it's tragic about all the collateral damage. It was tragic in Mosul. It was tragic in Fallujah. It was tragic in Afghanistan. It was tragic in Vietnam. But when the enemy deliberately tries to shield killers, you've got a moral dilemma. And Israel has killed fewer civilians per militant than any force that I know of. It's about 1.5-1. I think we were about 3-1. And in World War II, you know, it was even higher.
Well, Victor, I want to take just a moment to thank our sponsor, Factor. And Factor offers ever-fresh, never-frozen meals in chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready-to-eat packages. In just 2 minutes, choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. And for the listeners of the Victor Davis Hanson Show, Factor is giving you 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. Use the promo code VICTOR50, VICTOR50. Do that at factormeals.com/VICTOR50. Factor Meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Remember, head to factormeals.com/VICTOR50 and use the code VICTOR50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. And we thank the good people at Factor for sponsoring the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, one quick follow-up, and then I didn't say ahead of time that I wanted to ask this, but we mentioned Turkey, and I want to see if you have any thoughts on the Turkish elections. But on the spring offensive in Ukraine, do you believe that the Ukrainians would have done that independently, i.e. without strategic advice from and coordination with, in some way, the United States military?
No, I don't. Because if you look at Ukrainian military doctrine, it's indistinguishable from Russian military doctrine. And what is it predicated on? It's predicated on a tradition that goes back to World War II. And what is it? When they want to advance, they mass artillery, so they have a 3-to-1 superiority in artillery and rocketry. And then they completely blast an area, blast it. And then they slowly grind down the enemy. And apparently, Western advisors, Americans included, said, you don't have the artillery to match what the Russians are trying to do to you. This is what the Russians are trying to do to Ukraine. No, I guess nobody told them. And you've been very successful in fending off these Soviet-style tactics with drones and targeted strikes and air power, etc. But they basically emulated what the Russians were doing. A attack against fixed positions that was necessitated on artillery barrages, which they didn't have. So Western advisors looked at that and said, ah, but you've got to do what we do. You've got to have diversions. You've got to have encirclement. You have to have pincer, stiletto type, you know, bam, bam, bam. Then you get your tanks, your Abrams and your Leopard tanks and your Challenger, whatever they are, from, and you just go right through a thin line and you break through as if you're Alexander the Great. You circle in the back and everything. And they didn't have the wherewithal to do that. But more importantly, they didn't have the manpower. That's the problem with the Ukrainians. They've lost 12 million people have left Ukraine. The average age of a Ukrainian soldier is in his 40s, early 40s. They have a massive problem of recruitment, of draft resistance. And they're running out of people. They may have had anywhere from 200,000 to 300,000 total casualties, wounded, missing, dead. Maybe the Russians have suffered twice that. No doubt they have, but they can suffer three times that, four times, and still win. And so I don't know what we advise them, except you hear in the media that the Pentagon was really high on the idea of a spring blitzkrieg. But anybody who looked at that and compared the area, the population, and the GDP of the two powers, right, would have come to the conclusion you'd be a lot better off of you fortifying 600 miles, right, so that they can't get in. Even if you have to give up temporarily the Donbass or where they started in February 24th, and then just let them like a ram beat their head against it. And then when they're exhausted, maybe, just maybe, but that's not what they did. And they don't have the manpower. You can give them all the weapons. Everybody says weapons. It's not weapons. You know who knew that was Macron? Because the first thing he, when they asked him about it a few months ago, he said, we might have to put NATO troops there.
Right.
And what he meant was, he's stupid to say that, but what he meant was they don't have the manpower to win the war. And they don't. And anyway, they're no longer a nation of 44 million. They're a nation of 31 million. Yeah. And there's Ukrainians are a lot more Ukrainian. They're not like Israel, where people, Jews all over the world, were flying home to enlist in the IDF. It would be as if the IDF now, after 6 months, is lost not 300 or 400, but just hemorrhaging thousands, and people are fleeing Israel. You know, like, right, I don't know, 20% of the population says in Israel, we can't win, we're leaving. In fact, just the opposite happened. People that were not even Israeli citizens in some cases were volunteering.
Right.
And Israel's winning, so they're very different wars. And Israel, against Hamas, it has a lot more advantages than Russia, than Ukraine does against Russia. Now, I understand the wider Middle East, Israel's outnumbered, but that was where we were supposed to come into our allies' defense. This is what it's about, because if Biden keeps doing this and Blinken keeps saying these things, there's going to be people in Beirut and Damascus and Tehran, they're going to say, you know what? these Americans are sick of these Jews. They're sick of these Israelis.
Right.
And we really outdid them on the propaganda war. And our guys in Europe and the United States on campuses, they were disruptive. They were obnoxious, but it didn't matter. They were effective, and they're threatening the election, and Biden's weak. Now he's begging the Saudis for more oil. He's begging the Ukrainians not to hit oil sites in Russia. He's terrified of a Middle East war that will put the price of oil well over $100, and he'll lose. We've got him where we want him. That's what they're thinking right now.
Yeah,
and all the appeasement in the world won't stop that. And then if he keeps doing it, Hezbollah will really ramp it up. And so I think that's very dangerous what Blinken is doing. He's inept. So he's I don't know who's worse. I mean, Jake Sullivan said right before the October 7th, not right, but if remember the right. My portfolio is kind of, you know, it's just quiet. It's the quietest. There's nothing going on in the Middle East. Well, there was nothing going on because you inherited it from Trump. And then you did what? You took away the terrorist designation of the Houthis. You tried, begged to get in the Iran deal. And what do you expect? You started restoring funding to that corrupt UN organization that funds Hamas and the Palestinians. And they thought, well, the good old Biden is back. He's like Obama. He doesn't like Israel. So if we go do something after the initial little, how dare you attack our ally Israel, he'll tire real quick. And they were pretty prescient, weren't they?
Yeah. Well, Victor, we're going to talk quickly Turkey and immigration, and maybe one more thought on Israel. We'll do that right after these important messages.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Again, we are recording on Friday, the 5th of April, and this particular episode will be up on Tuesday, April 9th. Victor, before Turkey, I one last thing for me, maybe our listeners feel the same way. This disdain, this outrage over the deaths of seven aid workers last week in Gaza, and the intensity of the outrage by American officials doesn't seem to track the, I still don't, never sensed any outrage over the murder of Americans on October 7th.
And I don't either. That's a really wonderful point. I mean, they have American hostages. Why didn't Biden say on October 7th in the evening after he got the news, he could have easily said to Hamas, okay, you've got X number. I don't know what there were, 15 more. I don't know. You've got American hostages. These are U.S. citizens. Now, we're giving you 48 hours to release them. And we're not responsible to what happens to you after that. That's all they had to do. They didn't have to make a red line like Obama did. If I see, the Syrians moving WMD around, that's a red line. Well, we know how that happened. They did it and they laughed at them. They didn't have to get specific. They just said, we're not going to be responsible to what happens to you. And that could have been expressed in a lot of different ways. They could have just said to the Israelis, go to it. They won't give our hostages back. Go to it. Or they could have sent special forces, or they could have done a lot of things. And they could have looked at Iran. They could have gone to Tehran and they can say, listen, these people don't sneeze without your permission. Now you're going to get those hostages back. And by the way, screw you. We're not going to pay $1.2 billion for six hostages. But what we are going to do is give you a deadline. And these are the targets that we're going to look at. And I think they would have had a lot more success than they have now had they done that. Even with that administration that lost all credible deterrence after Afghanistan.
Well, Victor, on Turkey, again, I did not raise this beforehand, but do you have any thoughts, these headlines that Erdogan's party has lost significantly, some of these municipal elections, and signs that he's in trouble? And I'm just, if you have any take on that, and frankly, I don't know, whoever is the party that's pressing him, I wonder, is it worse than him, or would it be a step up? This could be the devil you don't know. Any thoughts on that before we talk about immigration?
Well, they're in trouble because when you get an election like that, I mean, they had removed a Turkey pro-Kurdish local mayor. There's a lot of women running for office in Turkey. So there is a genuine reform movement. But the Turkish economy's got about a 60% inflation rate. And he's just been printing money because the price of oil is killing him. It's up to $90. And then we put sanctions, such as they were, on Russia and Iran. And he had a lot of less transparent trade. That's really suffered with Russia and Iran because of the sanctions. The oil prices were killing him. His socialist policies on the economy were killing him. And the West has sort of backed off from him as far as foreign investment. I mean, who would want to invest in Turkey when he's threatening another NATO member, Greece, or when he goes into Syria to kill a bunch of Kurds, what the Americans ask him not to do? Or he's threatening Cyprus, and he's trying to stop a pipeline with the Greeks and the Israelis and the Cypriots. So a lot of people quietly said, oh, he's a NATO ally. We always like Turkey, Europeans and American. But our businesses are not going to invest in Turkey. You got to be insane to go into Turkey. And the result of all those factors is the economy is shot. And people are really angry at him. I don't know I think because he controls the ballot apparatus, he'll probably win the next election.
Yeah.
Because they're not transparent elections in Turkey.
Yeah. Well, Victor, I've heard from a number of my friends down south, and they've already started their barbecuing. And just hearing that word barbecue makes your mouth water. And you may already have a low temperature, slow cooking smoker, egg or pellet barbecue. But in the middle of your busy week, dear listener, who has that kind of time? You need a hot, fast solar infrared gas grill. It heats up to 1,000 degrees in just 3 minutes, even on cold winter nights. That heat locks in juices and flavor and grills food faster. In just a few minutes, your family will be sitting at the table enjoying delicious, better than restaurant quality grilled food, juicy steaks, moist chicken, tender fish, and healthy grilled veggies. Solaire is a multi-generational, veteran-owned business. Their portables, carts, and built-ins are all made in the USA from commercial-grade stainless steel, so they're built to last. Get your free guide, How to Choose the Right Infrared Grill, at besthotgrill.com. That's besthotgrill.com. Solaire Infrared Gas Grills for fast, delicious grilled food every day. That's besthotgrill.com. And we thank the good people at Solaire Infrared Gas Grills for sponsoring the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Okay, Victor, good people at Mark Krikorian and company at the Center for Immigration Studies has put out a piece. It's by Todd Bestman. This is off their website. The Florida Gateway, this is what it's titled. Data shows most migrant flights landing in Governor DeSantis' Sunshine State. Victor, there may be two stories here. That a lot of these migrant flights are going to Florida, but the fact that there are migrant flights at all under the Obama administration, according to this piece, 386,000 immigrants through February, so there must be over 400,000 by now, have been flown into the United States. So they don't cross the border illegally. We'll fly them in and parole them, put them on, and then they just disappear into the fruited plains. So this is, I don't know, maybe I'm
You know, I guess it's horrible. It is. It's even weirder when DeSantis got mad and he flew some in to a while ago into Martha's Vineyard. Then they got left wing money and lawyers to represent illegal aliens who's then sued the charter plane company for landing them in heavenly Martha's Vineyard. So it's very selective is what I'm saying. A subtext of this whole catastrophe of 10 million people unlawfully entering here is that I know that we get a lot of attention that they're being bused, but that was belated. That was the last year. It's basically heavily affected two states, Florida and Texas. I know Arizona now when they put the barbed wire redirected to California. And that was by intent. Because when people look at this and they see there's no effort to stop it, and Mayorkas and Biden are encouraging it, and they're actually flying people over the border, they're landing for the most part in Texas. And why are they doing that? Well, they want to have this 10 million influx counted in the next census. That will help long term to recalibrate congressional districts. But there was a story that came out, I think, on Reuters, that there were already 300,000 people that may have been unlawful that voted in the 2022 or tried to. So when you have a state that is voting 70%, as many states are, although Florida is much better at that than other states in authenticating ballots, and you mail out ballots to people whether they want them or not when they come in contact with the state agency, the left's eyes get big and their mouth starts to water. And the only thing that's going to stop this until Trump, if he should be elected, is that all of these agencies that are quote unquote nonprofit, Voter Integrity Project, Democracy, the Project for Democratic Inclusivity, all that stuff, they're really fronts for left-wing candidates in the Democratic Party, but they're already starting to send internal memos and to be afraid that in this effort to register voters, i.e. Latino voters, that all of this effort might be nullified. Think about it, Jack. For every vote, your voter that you may be able to register by illegally bringing them in here or flying, you may alienate a voter who is going to vote, who is Latino, who's furious at you because their communities are impacted by gangs. They're impacted by crowded health facilities, crowded schools. They're angry that people from China and Africa and parts unknown come in and get up to $1,500 a month in social service, that they're not eligible for the same commensurate amount. And so I've always said that if the Latino vote goes 50-50, the left will close that border in 2 minutes, because this is, as I said, it's not naivete, it's not laxity, it's not indifference, it's not left-wing. This was deliberate. This was to import a constituency. They had the whole script down. Import the constituency, flood the courts with suits, cherry-pick liberal justices, and then start the great narrative that white racists are xenophobic, and they don't want people of color in, and they believe in the great replacement theory, even though they write books with the title, The New Democratic Majority or Demography is Destiny. And so I'd like to remind our readers, I review a lot of books, but in the next June issue of New Criterion, I've got about a 7,000 word analysis of this new book called White Rural Rage, Jack. This is the worst book I have ever read. Wow. It is a complete attack on middle class Americans who are white, on Christians, and it has no evidence. And even the evidence that they claim they have from scholars about the so-called violent anti-democratic propensity of rural white Christians, the authors of those studies in Reason magazine and Political, across the political, are saying this doesn't represent me. They misinterpreted my and you look at their evidence, they didn't even go out and talk to people. They just called up other, well, we think Christians are innately violent, and therefore that was what was behind January 6th. Well, you have no idea who was Christian, who or not, but what proof do you have that Christians are violent? Well, we had an academic that told us. That's the whole book. It's the most racist book I've ever read, and indicting a whole group on the basis of their skin. And it's, I hope I'll talk about it at length sometime.
That's a standard. We've discussed this a little bit, applicable to some of the DEI scandals at Harvard. The use of other studies to give yourself credibility by misusing the other studies, lying about the other studies, but nevertheless you imply they support your crazy idea. And it takes somebody to come along like Bill Ackman or somebody like that to investigate their scholarly work and find it's built on BS.
In this case, it was liberal scholars who said, not in my name, you're not going to quote my work when you came, you quoted it, and then you use the opposite of my own results. And the funny thing about it, this book, White Rural Rage, is they have one line, and it says, and we were, why did they write the book? Is it because they talked to people in the countryside? No, it was because we've had conversations about the long tensions between country folk and rural. And I'm thinking, so they've read Tocqueville on democracy.
Right.
They've read Jeffersonian letters about, you know, when the United States is piled up in the cities, it will be morally vacant. Oh, maybe they know the history of agrarianism. So they've read Hesiod's Works and Days or Virgil's Georgics. No, they haven't read any of that. They don't know any of it. There's not one major work about the agrarian sociology of a particular historical period. None. They don't. Maybe they like Wendell Berry, who I really admire. No, they don't. None of it. They don't know anything. It's just some journalist and academic. I'm not going to mention their names. And all they do is just rant and rave. And then they go on cable TV and say how awful white Christian people are. And January 6th proves they're violent. That's about it.
Your car breaks down in Petticoat Junction, or your car breaks down on the Cross Bronx Expressway. Tell me which one you're going to be more fearful of, right?
Well, I said that in the long essay. So what would be the symptoms, Jack, of a epidemic of white rural rage? Well, let's think about it. So white middle-class people would be overrepresented in interracial crime. Actually, they suffer six times a disproportionate. They're six times more likely to be a victim of black perpetrators than they are to perpetrate violence against blacks. Oh, well, maybe because these authors have this thesis, they cite hate crimes. We said that white rural rage, these people are dangerous. Why? They must be going around and beating up Jews. Are Arab? No. Given the demographic of white people in general, they're underrepresented as perpetrators of violence. And then they say they're unpatriotic. They don't like the Constitution. So I thought, wow, I'll go back. You know, I've said this before, but let me go back and look at the death rates in Afghanistan, Iraq, and an all-volunteer army. Because obviously, if you're a white rager, you don't like your country, according to these authors. The last thing you'd want to do is go, what, volunteer to go fight for it in some ungodly place like Fallujah or Kandahar. But guess what? Almost three quarters of the people who died there were white, male, middle-class people. And maybe they're only represented 34% of the population, but 72, 75%, they're dying. So nothing they say makes sense, is what I'm getting at. And as somebody who lives in a rural area and small town San Joaquin Valley, which is mostly Hispanic now, I don't know of any white violence at all when the demography of my town went from 70% white to 90% Hispanic. I don't. And when I look around, when I pick up the Fresno Bee and I want to know who killed somebody and left the scene of the accident, or I want to look at the language of newspapers when I see a bunch of garbage and bills thrown into my vineyard, or I'm walking out at night and I see somebody trying to strip down a car, I can tell you they're not white rural people in my experience. Not one have I ever had that happen. So it's, and I have been in the old day broken in three times before my security measures were completed. And I can tell you that of the, on the three occasions, not one of them was a so-called white person.
Yeah.
But I won't mention the, they were different ethnicities, but they were not whites. And I know people who are white rural people who are still here, and they're not racist. They're, the weird thing is that almost every white rural person I know is in, is multiracial, multi-ethnic. Right. So my older brother was married to a Mexican-American woman who passed away tragically. And my other brother has two Mexican-American children from his wife's first marriage. And all my, both my daughters had long, serious romances with wonderful Mexican-American kids. And that's true. My neighbor right around the corner, he's married to someone's Japanese. His children and grandchildren are part Japanese, they're part white, and they're part Mexican-American and Filipino. My daughter, who died at the time, was dating somebody who was Filipino. So it's just, this book is so outrageous.
Well, and look, that's in the new Criterion. Which
In June.
Familiarize themselves with.
It'll be in the June issue.
Okay. Well, Victor, we got one more quick last topic to raise, and that's Sotomayor being pressured by a Democrat senator to get the hell out. And we'll get your thoughts on that right after this final important message.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
With the Victor Davis Hanson Show, one last, two last commercials. One is for The Blade of Perseus, victorhanson.com. Folks, especially new listeners, if you've yet to visit, do that. And you will find links to Victor's weekly syndicated columns, the one mentioned earlier in this podcast, for example, his weekly essays for the American Greatness, the archives of this show, his links to other appearances, links to his books, including the forthcoming, The End of Everything, and then Ultra Articles, which you need to subscribe to the website in order to read. Victor writes two or three Ultra pieces a week. And if you are a fan of his writing and a fan of his wisdom, you're depriving yourself if you have not subscribed. So $5 gets you in the door, $50 discounted for the full year. The Blade of Perseus, go to Vance.com and check it out. Victor, my senator, one of my senators, Richard Blumenthal, you know the guy that...
Yes, I do. The Vietnam veteran.
Except he wasn't.
Combat veteran.
Right. He's pressuring Sotomayor, the Supreme Court Justice, who, by the way, is from the Bronx, and her first husband was actually from my neighborhood. So what? Get out. You know, your age, and we want a younger person in there. Strategically, you can see logic there, but it strikes me that if it was Justice Jackson was in her 70s or approaching 70. I think Sotomayor is right around 70.
I'm 70. I'm 70. Would Chuck
I'm
push
not
me out?
Dotage.
Would he say, Victor, we don't want, or would these senators, Blumenthal, say, Victor, please quit your podcast. You're too old.
Well, they probably would say that to you.
Yes.
But, you know, the hopes that someone who's going to come in like Clarence Thomas and, you know, maybe rack up 40 years. Sotomayor doesn't have 40 years ahead of her. Anyway, the fact that this is being done at all, and I think the fact that it's selective. I even sense, as we've talked before about ethnicity, I sensed growing disdain for Hispanics at elite.
Yes.
Anyway, I could be wrong, but go ahead.
I think there's three subtexts to this. Number one, they are starting to panic that even though Joe Biden he's crept up a little bit in the polls. I think the real clear average has gone from 31.9% a few weeks ago to 41% approval. But they are paranoid about the next election, and they are so seared that their favorite institution, the Supreme Court, that nullified legislative action and streamlined the Warren progressive agenda, fell into the hands of conservatives, partly because Donald J. Trump, what's her name? Barrett, Comey, and you got Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. And they don't want that to happen. And they think Trump will be president. Number two, they remember Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She was their heartthrob. She had cancer, two types of cancer. She was very frail, and yet she wouldn't step down. In fact, the left fell in love with her. Remember those stories? She was lifting weights, and she was at the gym, and she was indestructible, and anything she said. I mean, she once said, I don't remember that quote, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and I'm doing it from memory, where she said, well, I don't know what the big thing about abortion is. We're just, aren't they aborting the right people, meaning non-white poor people? And of course, the New Yorker tried to hush that up, that interview. But my point is this, is that they think that Biden will lose and Trump will have Supreme Court justices. But they look at the court, and the one that's the oldest happens, or the one that's the most frail, she's had health issues, is Sotomayor. And then they look at what happened with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who did not step down, but they feel narcissistically continued. Until she did that, Jack, she was the heartthrob in her older age. They made a movie about her. Remember that?
Right.
They loved her. Remember, she just said right out, she just attacked Trump from the bench. She said things that were very non-judicial. She didn't show a judicial temperament. She just went right in. They loved it. And suddenly, and then they start saying, she's indestructible. She's a weightlifter. And then she died. And Trump got another judge. So that's the second thing that they're angry about. So they don't want that to happen. The third is, I think you got a point there. They're looking at these polls, and you got to get into, everybody should get into the mind of the elite coastal, bi-coastal white person who's very affluent. And their way, they believe in noblesse oblige, that out of the goodness of their heart, at great personal cost to them, they fight white rural rage and other pathologies, Charlottesville, January 6th, on the behalf of black and brown people. And when black and brown people do not reciprocate fealty to these wonderful, brave white bi-coastal elites, they get really angry. I mean, they get really angry. They hate. There's one group in America that you talk to a white adult, progressive, bi-coastal liberal. You know who they hate the most of anybody? Are conservative blacks, a Tom Sowell, a Shelby Steele. Brilliant black people who don't necessarily toe their line. And they think, oh my God, they're ungrateful. And now they're turning that animus to Latinos based on these polls. And the thing that they're saying is, well, we let in 10 million people and the majority of them are still Hispanics. We've done that. We broke the law for you. We destroyed the Border Patrol. We've got 550 sanctuary jurisdictions. Look what we did for you. And now you're not going to vote for us? Screw you. That's their attitude. Yeah, that's their attitude. They think they own people collectively. And so they don't like individuals. So that's another thing that's moving them. And then it's very ironic, the final observation is, this is a person, remember, I wrote an article for NRO way back. I think she used the word wise Latina or Latina like 20 times in one speech.
Yes, Berkeley. Yes.
And then she said something even more, and I'm again quoting from memory, so some of the listeners should check me. She said, I just think a wise Latina has a better temperament than your typical white male judge. She said that white male, they needed some instruction. So she was obsessed with race and, to a lesser extent, gender. And then the final thing is, if you look at her profile or her decisions, and you compare them with other liberal judges or Anthony Kennedy swing voters or conservatives like Alito, she's not in that same category.
Right.
And she's not going to be writing trailblazing, spectacular opinion. She never has. And they know that. And so what they want is a young, I guess they'd want a young gay judge, first gay judge on the court, but we know of. A young trans judge, first trans judge, or another black woman. Because they don't count. They would say, well, there's 12% of the population is black. There's 9 justices. And there's already 2 blacks on it. But Clarence Thomas is not black. He's not. He doesn't count. So that's where they are. And it's just, they're so smug, these people who say that Blumenthal, he has no business telling a Supreme Court justice she's to step down.
Yeah.
Let her make that decision. She's an adult. She's not part of your property. She can make her own decisions. And the left has this very sermonizing idea with Chuck Schumer railing about, we're going to interfere as the ugly American into the internal affairs of our closest ally, Israel, and tell them they've got to remove that government. I mean, this is not Alan Dulles in 1947 in, you know, El Salvador, Nicaragua, or Bolivia, where the CIA just tells people, this is going to be your government. So I was really surprised that this audacity of these Democratic senators just to start telling people, well, you're going to quit, step down, and we're going to remove that foreign government. Where do they get that idea that they have that power, that audacity, especially because they're so mediocre? I mean, they're both mediocrities.
Right. Well, Victor, we have come to the end of this particular episode. We will conclude with 2 things. One, I'm going to boast about what I do. Jack Fowler, I write the Civil Thoughts, the free weekly email newsletter from the Center for Civil Society that's affiliated with AMFIL, where we help nonprofits, those nonprofits that try to strengthen civil society. Civil Thoughts offers 14 recommended readings, articles and essays I have come across the previous week that I believe you, dear intelligent American, would like. How do you get it? Go to civilthoughts.com, sign up. Again, it's free, and we are not selling your name to anybody, so don't worry about that. Again, victorhanson.com, go there and sign up. Many people, Victor, as you know, rate this show on iTunes and Apple. And you can leave 0 to 5 stars, and practically everyone gives you 5 stars. And some people leave comments. We read them, the comments here, the comments also on your website, Victor. And here's a short, sweet one. It's titled, We Need Swag. When do we get some swag? Hats, shirts, etc. to promote VDH. Keep up the great work. And it's signed J329PICK.
It's not a bad idea, Victor. I know, but every time I have some friends, and every time they see me.
Yeah.
They say VD. VD, Victor, what does that stand for?
Yeah.
So
come on. And, all right.
Some guys I think Scott Emmergood, he's a great guy. He might have made some caps for me. I don't know if it was Hanson Farms. And there was another person that Joey Tarskovsky, he was a great guy. He worked for me for a while, and he made a cap, VD, and I actually wore it once at a
airport, yeah. And somebody came up to me and said,
knocked it off, right?
Oh, well, that happened too. But this person basically inquired if I was a health official tracking promiscuous people.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to see, you know, this little peel off or stick on things on the back of car windshields. I'm going to see if I can make one up of VDH and some image of you. And we'll see what I can pull off in that regard. Anyway, J329 Pick, thanks for your great idea. Victor, you've been terrific with all the wisdom you shared. Thanks, folks, for listening, especially if you're a new listener. Thanks for coming. We hope you come back. And we will be back soon, with another episode of the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Much appreciated.